Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Stories of Briscoe and Bradshaw. I would be Bradshaw. That would be your Chickasaw native, your Chickasaw Hall of Famer, Oklahoma's favorite son, Mr. Gerald Briscoe. And we've got the youngest WWC Universal Heavyweight Champion, Intercontinental Champion, United States Champion, Tag Team Champion from the legendary, one of the greatest families in wrestling history, the Colon family out of Puerto Rico. He is the apple spitting Carlito, who has doubled in size over the last 10 years. Carly, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you guys doing, man? It's good to be here.
Hey, Carly, man, it's great to have you. Go ahead, Don.
I was one of the people jumping up and down when you came out in Puerto Rico. That was that had to be fun. Now, that had to be an awesome lifetime experience for you.
That was great. Yeah, I never experienced the Rock or Austin Pop, so that was the closest I think I'd ever get to one. So that was nice.
None of us have.
had you ever met that Bad Bunny before? Or
no, I'm not sure. I don't think I'd met him before that. No, maybe once or twice. I can't remember. But yeah, because he's one of the younger, before my time or after my time, I guess is what he'd say.
Yeah, it's amazing what kind of fan he is. I mean, it's unbelievable. He knows everybody and has total respect. That's what I find cool. He has total respect for everybody too that he's met.
I think he took it seriously too. I think he put the time in, and I think he did a great job.
I thought his match at where was it? Mania. I thought he had one of the better matches of the night.
I did too.
Yeah, I did too. I thought he did pretty good.
And you can tell the guys that really take that serious. They take our business serious. I mean, they get in there and they perform like a professional. They are, and they study up on us. You could tell he had had some great olive training, just his timing and his ring posture and all that stuff. And I'm sure he studied a lot of Carlito film.
Well, no, because he did a good job, so he probably didn't study a lot of Carlito stuff, but he did a great job.
Yeah.
It's been amazing. You got Logan Paul, Pat McAfee, Bad Bunny. I mean, those guys haven't just come in and done well. They've hit it out of the park. Ooh. I mean, they're all great athletes, but that doesn't mean a great athlete doesn't always translate to what we do. But for those guys, they really put in their time, and they've done an incredible job.
Right. I think it's one of the differences that they're just huge fans of, of the product, So I think that's what also helped them kind of acclimate to our style of wrestling.
Jerry?
Go ahead.
Jerry usually hops in. I can't keep him from hopping in. And the one time
–
I want him to interrupt, he won't say anything.
Yeah.
I will leave you out there, John. You're doing such a great job. Just wanted to leave you where you're going there. But
we're two old guys who have no idea what we're doing, Carlito. It's why our show's so bad. We're hoping that you're going to save it.
Well, I don't know about that. let's pray for the best.
Carly, when you're growing up there, I mean, you grew up on an island. It's not a huge place, but Puerto Rico is pretty. It's a beautiful island, beautiful people down there. I've spent a lot of time, coming in and out of there throughout my career. Being here in Florida all the time, our TV was in Puerto Rico for quite a few years. So I was fortunate enough I got to come down there. I always loved the island and everything. Your dad was such a huge star. When did you realize that, hey, my old man, he's something special, man. I got to pay attention to what he's doing.
I just think it's when we go out anywhere publicly, you know, these people would, all these people would come up and bug my dad. I always wondered, why is it, you know, why do they like this guy so much? Why do they interrupt him every 5 minutes? And then, you know, I slowly realized why exactly people love him so much.
And were you always a fan of the product? I mean, did you watch it? Did your dad kayfabe at all? Was there anything, you know, with your father being?
There was all that. He kayfabe, you know, until probably he asked me to wrestle. You know what I mean? He always, you know, my dad always protected the business. And then I think I had no choice but to become a fan because I did every job there is, you know, in the company. I started, you know, I was a beer hawker. I put up the ring. I was a cameraman. I worked in the canteen. So I kind of just evolved into being a wrestler eventually.
Well, when you were growing up doing all that stuff, did you ever befriend any of the wrestlers and, you know, kind of, hey, I kind of want to get in this eventually. Can you help me out? Or how did that process ever, were you kind of like your dad, hey, guys, leave him alone now. He's got to finish school and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, the older I got, I guess, because, you know, at first, they let us backstage for a little bit, then we had to get out. But then, yeah, slowly, you know, little by little, just working around, being around all the time, I met a bunch of the guys. And I always realized that for some reason, I don't know why, the good guys, I mean, the bad guys always seemed like the nicer guys. The good guys seemed like the jerks to me. It was always funny to me to see him go out there and everybody loved him. I was like, wait a minute, have you guys seen this guy backstage? Like,
that's all
and
true.
And then, you know,
that's all
these
true.
Bad guys, they thought were these terrible people backstage were just, you know what I mean? Like, why does everybody hate these guys? I don't get it. They seem so nice.
That's 100% true. That's all true. Bad guys are, we're the good guys.
Were you a bad guy, John?
No. I was a good guy. People misunderstood me.
That's what I thought. They just misunderstood
me. So, when you're growing up and you're seeing every big star in the world went through Puerto Rico because you guys were drawing massive freaking crowds and doing great business. And everybody wanted to go down the island also. We're making good money, but they won't go down the island. What was it like with like the neighborhood kids and everybody else? You had access to these massive international stars, not just your father, but your father, obviously you knew. So you kind of discount that because that's your dad, but all these huge stars were coming in. How did that the neighborhood kids treat you because of that?
Well, mainly because, you know, nobody wrestled with me because of my dad. You know what I mean? They thought because my dad was a big wrestler, thought I could fight. So that actually helped me out a lot. And then all these, the big stars, you know, to me, they were just regular guys, you know what I mean? Because I was, like I said, I was always backstage. I just saw them as regular Joes. But, you know, I could see the way, you know, all my friends would ask me about, you know, this guy and that guy. And, yeah, you could see how way people idolize them. But, yeah, to me, they were just another guy, you know what I mean?
You had to have some favorite stars. I mean, the list just goes on and on. But I know you showed your hairstyle from one of the Samoans down there. When you see guys like the Samoans, you know, big vicious guys, were you ever intimidated by any of these guys? Or did they try to work you or anything or pull ribs on you as a young kid?
Yeah, some of the guys. Yeah, Abdullah the Butcher would do that. You know what I mean?
Abby's notorious for that, too.
Yeah, Abby was notorious for that. Yes.
Yeah, so Abby scared the older guys, too.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, but that was always great seeing him, you know, just go into the crowd and you see this bunch of people, hundreds of people just run in the opposite direction. I mean, he was something to see.
You know, during those entrances, and you were right out there most of the time with a camera in your hand, you would see it firsthand, but, you know, all the people, as you're coming down those entrances, those big ballparks, you know, they start crowding in. All of a sudden, Abby would turn. As soon as Abby would turn, it was like damn Red Sea parting. People
everybody,
would be scattering
exactly.
Everywhere, getting out everywhere, running, screaming, hollering. Like, I don't want a part of that guy. Abby had the best entrance, I think, anybody down there.
He really did. Yeah, he really did. Yeah. The other guys were unlucky because they would throw batteries and all kinds of things at him back in the day. But yeah, Abby was one guy that they just did not want to mess with.
You know, it was amazing when I was watching the premium live event. I guess they call it now instead of pay-per-view. The premium live event from Puerto Rico. People were telling me how great the crowd was. That wasn't a great crowd. That was a Puerto Rico crowd.
Right, exactly. I was like, yeah, they've always kind of been like that.
Yeah. And the Puerto Rican people are incredibly passionate people about everything, about their sports, about their baseball, about their wrestling. I mean, that's just it had to be fun growing up in the business like that in such a hot territory and having that type of response from Puerto Rican people.
Yeah, it was great. I think, you know, it's something that they'd wanted to see for years, you know, and I was glad that we were able to give them that surprise. And you know, the way things get out, I thought for sure it would get out before I came out, but for some reason, nobody ever said anything, and it was a pleasant surprise for people.
And you started off as the cameraman, the working camera guy. It's funny how the camera guy always gets involved somehow, you know. It's just,
yeah,
we've had poor camera guys have stuff happen to them over the years. Either somebody jumps over the top rope and lands on a camera guy or something. Somebody comes up. But tell us the story. You were the camera guy. It was a really well set up storyline of you just working for your dad and being like a part time or helping out.
Yeah, I was that was the camera guy. I worked the hard cam. And there was this guy, you know, this a rival of my dad's, Ray Gonzalez, that was messing with him. And then he thought he'd get under skin by messing with me. So eventually, I think he did something to my dad where I guess I'd had enough, where I just jumped the barricade and I just started attacking him. And
what then, was the story out already that you were Carlo's son?
Yeah, that's what this kind of they started. Yeah, people knew before because they'd seen me around all the time, you know, so word gets around. But I think on TV, that was the first time like they acknowledged that I was Carlos' son. So actually, no, it was a couple times because I remember they did one angle when I was younger. They threw ammonia in my dad's eyes, and I remember I didn't get the business how things work, but I remember they asked me to be like put my head down and act like I'm crying. I was like, I'm not gonna cry, like, you know what I mean? Like, my friends are gonna make fun of me, whatever. No, kid, we need you. I was like, whatever. So I guess unwillingly I did that, and then but now I get the business. But yeah, for me it was one of the terrible things that they asked me to do above amongst all the other things they've asked me to do in this business. Especially when you work for your father.
It's funny the stuff we get asked to do.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
You know, we always say it's a work until they ask us to do something we really don't want to do and go, wait a minute, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, my character wouldn't do that.
My character wouldn't do that. Yeah.
That's a lot always, right? Well, you know, I'm okay with it, but I just don't think my character would be like that.
My character.
So Carlito, who trained you? Did your dad train you himself, or were you trained by somebody else?
Yeah, my dad trained me a little bit, but there's been that in Isaac and Ricky Santana also trained me when I was starting out. So like I said, I trained for about twice a week for 3 weeks, and then I was just thrown to the wolves. So I kind of learned on the job, which I think is really, looking back, is kind of the best way to learn.
Yeah, I think it is too, and I think your dad had it right there because the workers that you guys always that your dad always booked down there in the territory were top flight bookers. I mean, from the first wrestler from the first match on up to the main event, Carlos always had top talent down there in every position. So you were kind of blessed to be in that atmosphere. It was a top. People really don't give it the credit that it deserves. It was a top class territory. I mean, it was a regular territory that the guys actually really wanted to go down there. Plus the beauty of the island and the fantastic friendship of the people down there. But the talent level that you had to get in the ring with and share the ring with was phenomenal. Every trip I ever made down there.
Yeah, pretty much, you know, anybody passed through my dad's territory. So we saw, yeah, great talents going through there.
Yeah, you can't name a world champion, I think, that didn't come down there on a regular basis and enjoyed being down there too, you know, from our time and even before that.
Hey, Carlito, tell me about Dutch Mantell. I don't know if Dutch was working for your dad at the time when you were a kid, or he's working for the competition, because he went back and forth a bunch, but I love Dutch.
He went back and forth, I remember him doing the cowboy gimmick in my younger days, and then he went over for the opposition and was, I think, the booker there. And, but, you know, he was always, you know how he is. He's always a character.
He was great. He loved Puerto Rico, you know, but he would bounce back and forth between companies. And so I didn't know if he was on good graces right now with you or with bad graces with you, because if you wait a couple of weeks, it might change.
I think he's in good graces, but you know, this business too, right? Nobody's really ever in bad graces, I think. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. And then nobody
ever, one of those businesses you can say when you say never say never, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and nobody ever dislikes Dutch. You know, no matter what Dutch does, you love Dutch because Dutch is Dutch.
Yeah, he's very. I think he's very likable. He's an acquired taste, but he's very likable.
Acquired taste, I like it.
Yeah.
So, Carlito, when did you decide? Was WWE was always what your goal was to get to from Puerto Rico, or did you want to stay there and take over your dad's business? What was the progression that you ended up down in OVW?
Yeah, I never really thought that I could, you know, make it to WWE. So that was never my goal. But also, I've seen the side, you know, the side of promoting, And I never wanted any part of that. You know what I mean? They always said, yeah, the plan was to take over my dad's business, but I never wanted to be promoted. I would see all the stress that they go through, and I said, you know what? I don't, you know, dealing with the boys is probably one of the hardest things there is. I'd never want any part of that.
Yeah, that is a difficult part
You're
of
telling me the
promotion.
boys are hard to deal with?
So you had that in mind when you came to WWE. So why were you so difficult to get along with then?
I was difficult to get along.
No, I'm just kidding you there. No, but that's a good point that you see right off the head, and then you kind of experience it firsthand. And when you get in that position, why am I like that? You know, I saw that. I didn't like that when I said, why do I want to be like that? And you were always a first class. You always treated everybody the same with much respect. And I think that's the reason you were such a good hand backstage with everybody too, because the way you treated people, and that came from your upbringing, from your dad, I'm sure.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. And just, you know, like growing up in the business, like, you know, we got to all work with each other. Nobody's better than anybody. You know what I mean? And, you know, if you're in a certain spot, somebody helped you get there. You know what I mean? So it's all everybody working together.
Yeah, I always thought second generation guys, you know, just have an advantage, you know, because they grew up in the business. You know, a lot of us grew up wrestling fans, but we didn't grow up in the business, you know, and all that learning that just comes from your family being in the business just gives you. You look at all the second generational stars; they're always way ahead of other stars, you know, like when they start out because of their background, and most of them are just like you. They're very good guys because they've seen the bad side of the business. And they don't want to be the bad side of the business because they saw a lot of it grow up, especially with your dad as a promoter. He had to deal with the bad side of the business from a promoter standpoint, and that can be pretty tough.
Yeah, you know, and I saw all the games and all the politics and how things work. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, this is not worth it. I just thought, you know, just be myself and hopefully things will take care of themselves.
So how did you end up in OVW?
I believe that was Bruce Pritchard that was sent down for the competition to check out some talent over there, and I guess he came across my dad's program, and then he recommended me to the office. And I think like a few months later, I got a call to go do a dark match. I think one in Greensville and one in Greensboro. I worked Tommy Dreamer one night, and I worked the Jamie Noble the next night. And then yeah, after that, I was hired, and a couple of months later, they sent me down to OVW.
Did you like your training in OVW?
Yeah, I mean it was fun. It was a good group of guys and
I mean,
girls.
the reason I
You
ask
know.
is, you know, you grew up in the business, and a lot of the training is set up for people who don't know anything about the business. Because it's hard to have a start of a class when you have guys who maybe wrestled on the independents for 3 years. You have somebody who grew up in the business, then you have somebody who just came in that they thought was a great talent that hadn't done anything. You know, it's hard to have a class to start, and sometimes the guys that are further along feel like they're just kind of being held back a little bit by the system because the system is built from guys starting almost from scratch.
Yeah, right. I think, yeah. But I mean, I know I kind of knew what it was or what it would be. So I kind of just adjusted to it. It was weird. I don't think I'd ever done matches in front of nobody before. So that was very weird, you know, or in front of a, what do you call it? In front of a class or practice group. So that was a little different for me. But other than that, I kind of just knew, you know, what I had to go through to get where I wanted to go.
You know, I
Good,
can't
good.
do that. I would hate that because I see these
Yeah.
guys come in for tryouts, and sometimes they'll have tryouts in front of like the boys and girls
Right.
on the
Yeah.
bus, you know, but there's no crowd there, and you're trying to get a reaction.
And that's the worst audience in the world to get a
It's
reaction from.
terrible.
Yeah.
Just awkward and weird and yeah, it was a
Yeah.
terrible experience.
When you're at OVW, I mean, they're famous for the classes that they put out. Who are some of your classmates down there that you went in training with? You recall?
When I was there, it was me, it was Mickey James, Chris Masters, Daivari was down there, Nemeth, Nick Nemeth was down there, or Dolph Ziggler. Who else? A couple of guys. I was the class right after Cena, Randy,
Right.
and them. Like we were the ones after. There's a couple of
And
I can't remember.
your storyline I thought was awesome down there, where you're turning heel and then your family's hearing about it in Puerto Rico that you're turning heel. It's such a It's such a cool storyline to have that your brother comes up and tries to talk you out of it, and he won't let him into the hotel, won't let him into the building. Your dad ends up coming up. It's such a cool story. Who came up with that?
I think my dad and them came up with it. You know, it's
I think it was your dad, Bruce. I think your dad had a great amount of input to it, and I think Bruce kind of spruced it up to the WWE style. You know,
I wouldn't be surprised if Bruce had something to do with it. Yeah, and you know, because my dad was just this, you know, eternal babyface. You know what I mean? So it was a big shock to people that his son could be this terrible heel. You know, so that how dare him? You know what I mean?
Do you recall how the apple and the coolness evolved with your character?
Yeah, if you notice back in the day, my vignettes were all just a bunch of Razor Ramon ripoffs.
Yeah,
you know, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that until I was at the Hall of Fame for I think Ducky Razor Ramon. And I'm looking at his vignettes. I said, wait a minute, like son of a okay. They just gave me lazy redos of the vignettes, and then one of them. He was somewhere at a vendor's, and he got some kind of fruit. I forgot what it was, and spat it at somebody. And then my version was, I was at the fruit stand, and when the guy asked for me to pay him, I took an apple, I bit it, and I spit on him. And then I guess the office loved it, and they said, okay, I want you to keep on doing that. I was like, all right, as long as I'm the one doing the spitting, I don't care.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's funny you say that because I was doing a skit one time, paying some guy to clean my car or something like that, whatever it was, you know, on television. And at the end, I tricked them and didn't give them the money. And as soon as I did it, I thought, that's exactly what Ted DiBiase did.
Right.
And I realized it's just recycled. You know,
And it's kind of funny in our business show. Sometimes we think we're the first ones to do something. If you do a little research, man, being first in our business is very, very difficult on anything.
Right. But then there's some things, no matter how many times you do them, they work every time, you know?
Yeah. And so, when at what point you end up with your brother and your cousin, Primo and Epico, coming up? What point were they decided to come up? And it has to be cool now at this point to be getting over as this heel coming through the ranks, winning titles. And then you got your brother and your cousin up there with you as well.
Yeah, I mean that was fun, especially think back at WrestleMania.
And you're riding with one of your brothers now, aren't you? So you got to say something good about him, right?
Yeah, I got to put him over, right? Yeah. It was fun. It was great to have those guys with me. And like I said, you know, like at WrestleMania too. Like you know, it's one of, especially if you're a wrestling fan, it's for brothers. That's kind of like one of their biggest dreams, is to be in a tag match or wrestling each other. So the fact that we could do that at WrestleMania is kind of one of those. One of my favorite moments I think I've had.
You know, I enjoyed, you know, one of the great things that Don and I get to do when we do these shows, we do a little research on guys that we know. But, you know, I felt the same way. And when I heard that quote that I was listening to an interview today, you said that's one of the highlights, winning the titles with your brother at WrestleMania. One of my biggest thrills and one of my all-time highlights is winning the titles with my brother Jack at Starrcade. So, it's a special feeling. You know, you could go through and win individual belts all your career, but you're standing there with your brother, and you guys achieve something that promoters have confidence that you guys are the right ones, and they go with you. It makes you feel good. Then you look over and see your partners, your brother. Just gives you those goosebumps. It makes it extra sweet, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of cool, too. Like if you ever want to do something together, you know, you'd want it to be one of your siblings, you know what I mean? So, that's definitely memorable.
Yeah.
Did your dad ever mention how tough it was to work with the Briscoe brothers?
Oh, he actually put him over pretty strong every time he talked about him.
Was he drinking at the time, or was it with Jovica, or what? Why was he?
It was back in the day, so yeah, it was probably a lot of drinking involved. But yeah,
there was. Your dad was still is a phenomenal businessman. I enjoyed working for him, and always. He always there was this restaurant. I mean, everybody has their special times when you mark out over seeing somebody, right? So your dad took us to I think Clemente, and there's a specialty seafood place there. They serve the fish and it's whole, you know. We walk in there, we get taken to the back, Mr. Colonia, we got a special table for you. Well, in the back there, we were in this beautiful lady sitting there. We're all eating, and all of a sudden, Your dad asked her, "Is that who I think? That's Miss Sophia Loren." We were having dinner in Sophia Loren's dining
Wow.
room.
Really?
She was still gorgeous as hell. I don't know how old she was, but she was knock dead gorgeous. And I just totally marked out,
I did not know that story.
Yeah,
Wow. That's
but that's the power your dad had. And then of course she comes over and gets introduced to all of us and everything. It was one of those special occasions, Joey. I'm still we're talking about it. I remember it so well. But yeah, just seeing that lady there, and I never forget. I admit, whole red snapper, and like I said, the eyeballs red, everything. Man, what a preparation for the food. The food was just gorgeous, and of course meeting Sophia Loren was one of the highlights of my career. meeting special people, but that was all because of your dad.
That's a pretty cool story, yeah.
Hey, my dad passed away at age 87, but up until the day he died, all he talked about when he had mentioned a beautiful woman, he goes, "That's just like Sophia Loren." That's all he would say. And I'd say, "Dad, she's like 80 something now." And he goes, "So am I." And I go, "All right."
Oh
But
my.
that
She had to be in her 70s then, and I mean, she
she
looked
was
like she was
gorgeous.
in her 50s, man. She looked gorgeous. That's just absolutely beautiful. And of course, had that sun burst on her face, where she'd been out in the sun a little bit that day, and just a gorgeous woman, But the memory, your dad was always like that, would take you to top places to eat down there, and you could tell the respect. He'd walk in these restaurants, these 5-star restaurants, and he'd be moved up toward the head of the line there, and get the main event seating, the Bob Bieger seating, as I said.
It's still like that. They still take care of them.
Yeah, cool.
Of course, yeah. It's like Nolan Ryan in Texas.
Yeah.
The guy could be king of Texas, just like your dad could be king of Puerto Rico if they had one. Legends don't die. They just get better and better and better. And the longer they're around, the more grateful people are
Yes. Oh,
they
yeah.
are
More.
around.
Yeah.
And so
Yeah.
they treat them better and better and better over the years, as they should.
Right. Yeah. They should. Yeah. Exactly.
So you're moving now to Florida. Is that are you are you moving from Puerto Rico?
No, I'm moving from. I was in Texas for a minute, Houston. You guys know. Then I went to Vegas for try something new. I'm not a West Coast guy, so now I'm back to Florida. I lived in Florida back in 06, maybe. So I always liked Florida. It's the closest thing to Puerto Rico without being Puerto Rico.
So you're staying in tax-free states.
Yeah, you know what? That's yes.
Oh
I realize I'm a big fan of tax-free states. Yes.
my goodness. Hey, Puerto Rico now is becoming the hedge fund capital of the world, along with South Florida because of the tax-free status.
Right.
Why live up in the north or anywhere else and pay a ton of extra taxes when you don't have to?
Right. I need to look into that because I don't know, because I'm Puerto Rican, if that applies to me. But I would like to look into that, see if I can get those tax breaks too.
Can you get it for your friends?
I might be able to.
I know a couple that would like to be able
They're
to.
like the down to Puerto Rico, and
That's right.
I think, but it has to be your main residence, though. I think, right? That's the thing.
It does. You have to be, yeah, it has to be your main residence. So wherever you move from, it's 183 days. You have to be out of where you were moved from. So
Okay.
you don't have to spend over 183 days in the state, but you can't spend 183 days in a place that you were from. So if you
Okay.
move from a tax state to a no tax state, because I know, because I'm
That's
trying to
what you're trying to pull
I'm
off.
trying to legally avoid paying state tax up north, because I'm moving to Texas and I got to legally do all this stuff so I can make sure that I don't get audited. And
Out
if I do get audited, then I am correct.
of
And Carlitos, a crazy separate point here. You talk about Puerto Rico. I've always wondered, do you think Puerto Rico should become a state? And I know it's a crazy question, but I've always wondered why it wasn't.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I kind of like the way it is. So we're kind of like a part of it, but we also have our own identity. And it's one of those things. If the independence is, how they say like the boys ruin it for the boys. I think if it was independent, they run it into the ground. You know what I mean? So I like that we have the U.S. backing us, but I also like that we have our own kind of identity.
Yeah, the way I said it, it's kind of like, when you have a natural disaster like a hurricane that you guys get hit with every once in a while, it's good to have that statehood, and I get all the assistance. But you guys pretty
Oh,
well
yeah.
get the FEMA and get a lot of different organizations down there helping out there. But But yeah, I've talked to a lot of people, a lot of friends, that are citizens down there, and they see it the same way. You know, there are times that you wish it was a state, and a time that you're very happy that it's not a state.
Do you
there.
Get any right. benefits if you were to become a state? Does it change your life as a Puerto Rican any?
Not really. I think the only, but I might be wrong, but I think the only thing that we can't do is be president. We have right. every other, and luckily that wasn't in my plans. So that doesn't
no.
That doesn't really ruin anything for me.
As long as you become a WWE superstar, you're all right with it.
Exactly. Yeah.
I just saw a picture of Kane, Big Glenn Jacobs, down at the border. So he may become president sometime. Of course, he's from Tennessee, so that's allowed. But I have a feeling he's gonna move up politically soon.
He might be. Yeah, he's doing some things.
He's big enough. If nothing.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
I saw him walking down there, and he just looks like a giant. You know, he still looks like Kane. You know, he's walking down there, and he's like, that guy's really impressive. You know, it's helped that he's 6'10" or whatever he is.
Yeah. Big boy. Carly, yeah, doing all those vignettes. I mean, and they still hold true to being some of the best work that we've ever done and ever shown on our TV there. What was your favorite vignette that you did? Because you have so many iconic ones, but what do you remember any that really stand out to you?
I'm trying to think. We're going way back now. I just remember just doing all those vignettes in Miami. It was just fun, being in Miami, being on the beach. I did one, but I didn't want that. This time was Shaq where he hit me with a chair, but that was cool. I'd never met Shaq before. That was cool seeing, talking about big people.
He's huge.
He's
huge. People don't realize how big that man is.
He is huge. Yeah, he's gigantic. So, that was kind of cool. And I think I did something. I did one. We're doing these WrestleMania vignettes. I did something where I got in a fight with a pigeon.
And I remember that.
Yeah, just I was able to, they just gave me the freedom to just be as ridiculous as you can. It's like, all right.
That's one of the great things about when you're a heel character, you can do anything.
Yes, exactly. And you're not afraid to make, to make a fool of yourself. You don't care. It's like, I'm a bad guy. I don't mind embarrassing myself.
Yeah. If something goes wrong, it's perfectly fine.
It's fine. Yes. I mean, he's a bad guy. Who cares?
That's right. There's
not guys. Yeah. They get like too sensitive or too like, bro, you're a bad guy. Don't worry. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. If the good guy trips on the rope or something or falls down.
Then, yeah.
They'll be crushed for months. For us, it's like, so what?
I'll get up and do it again.
I'll bitch at the referee for not putting the ropes up correctly and all the staff. And
so much to do, yeah, exactly.
What and during your career, what do you like performing best, as a babyface or as a heel?
Oh, it's definitely heel. I've always enjoyed being the heel more than a babyface. I don't know, it just for me, I think, Carlitos, I hear people say, like, people like him. He's a likable character, but he's still a heel character. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's a heel character that just does, things that'll make you laugh or just make you like it, but he's still a heel character. I think that's where he gets his.
And then you had a very difficult role. Big Cool is Big Cool. I mean, it's usually a babyface cool, but you took that cool to a different level where people hated you for being so damn cool. That had been a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah, it's always fun, making people angry.
Yeah.
I've always thought, Carlito, and I've talked to Piper about it a lot, that there aren't that many people that really want to be heels. Every generation, there's really not but two or three that really enjoy being a heel. When you enjoy being a heel, it's just a different world. Most people deep down kind of want to have a heel section, a heel fan base. Very few people actually really want to be nasty heels.
Yeah, but yeah, most of them want to be the heroes or want to be loved. I mean, it's very few of us that kind of embrace, being the bad guy, did I say.
Yeah, we had some classic examples of that down there, and I love the man to death, but he was always Ox Baker. I mean, Ox had the heel look of anybody you ever seen in your life in this business. Big, ugly guy, huge, big, ugly body, big, hairy, ugly body. And, man, he hated being a heel, and he hated it. I mean,
really?
You would see, we would have to really get on him. You'd see him down there in Florida, over in a babyface line, signing an autograph, laughing and joking, slapping people on the back. Ox, come on, you got this big angle with Dusty coming up. You can't be out there socializing these guys. You know, you got to be out there cussing them out and everything. He just couldn't ever get over the fact that, you know, Ox was a great guy. I don't know if you guys ever knew him, but what a great guy he was in person too. But he just couldn't ever turn that corner and be a heel 100%. You know.
Yeah, I'd seen him perform in Puerto Rico. Yeah. Another guy that I'm sure he liked being a heel was Dick Murdoch.
Yeah.
Loved being he loved being a heel. Yeah. Jerry knows him very well. Dick was one of my first tag partners. Oh, he loved being a heel. I mean, just loved it. He loved being a heel to me, and I was his tag partner. Every day. Go ahead and start the match, kid. When it turns to shit, tag me in. I'll straighten it. Every single night. He finally, when he called me, he goes, "You know, you work hard. You're just an idiot, though."
I'm thinking.
You don't know whether to say thank you or huh? Well, I'm glad he's talking to me. I guess he's my tag partner.
you had all those guys coming down there during your time there as you're looking on. You know, we talked about Abdullah. You know, one of the great heels and. And a Gorilla Monsoon was down there, you know, a lot with your dad. I think a business partner with your dad, also down there. Did you and Gorilla ever form a good friendship?
No, I was too young.
Too young,
I was just too young. I was, you know, I must have been 6 or 7, maybe around that time.
And he was already passed when you came up to WWE.
Yeah,
his last thing he did in WWE, I guess, was that thing with Vader, you know, where he let Vader get a little heat on him, you know, and, you know, we're like going, come on, that's Gorilla. You can't – even the boys were like, oh, come on, that's Gorilla. That's
a bit much. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, it's a bit much.
you can't do that to Gorilla. It's just impossible. So, Carlito, what led to the comeback in Puerto Rico? And the LWO and all that. I mean, that's pretty cool. That when I saw that, I mean, I knew how the crowd would be. I knew the crowd would be as good as it was. It's just, and you're watching it, you're going, man, this is awesome. This is so much fun to watch. And then you come out and the place goes bananas and I look like Carlito ate Carlito. You're so big. What happened to you, by the way? I mean, you're all swole. You're like Sheldon Benjamin. You're,
And I got to tell you that that exact line that said he sent me a text that night. We're both watching. He's in Texas. I'm out here in Florida. He said, "You see Carlito? Who ate Carlito? Who was the Carlito?"
Yeah, I said Carlito looks like Carlito. That's the text I sent to Jerry that night when we're watching the pay per view. Oh my God, he's huge.
I had a lot of free time on my hands, I guess.
Apparently. So did you decide all of a sudden, because that's what Sheldon did. Sheldon decided all of a sudden, I just want to get big and strong and have some time, which you didn't have before because you're working all the time.
It actually started off as a joke. We were on the road somewhere. It was me, Chris Masters, and Bobby Lashley. And I said, you know, I just said, oh, yeah, we're going to join you guys. We're all going to be, you know, we're all going to be body guys. And then I kind of just started working out, and then it kind of, started, you know, I said, you know, comparing myself to this, wait, I'm kind of close to them. I'm going to keep going. And I just kind of just kept going and, you know, I didn't stop.
Are you doing anything specifically different? I mean, are you eating more or just the amount of training you're doing that for the first time
just,
in your life?
Yeah,
you're not having to work so much.
Yeah, just the consistency, I think. I just working a lot more. And of course, you got to eat more. But I think, I hardly take a day off, you know, because when we travel, you don't know when your day off is going to be. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, so what I do is I just go every day I can. And then when I can't, I don't stress out about it. Because, I mean, on the road, you would do that. You know, sometimes you go without training and then you'd worry about, okay, where am I going to, you know, when am I going to get this next session? And so I just, you know, I train every day and then the free days will just pop up. And that's how I maintain consistency. I stop, you know, you stop coming up with excuses and you just go, you know.
You mentioned Chris Masters. You and him have become very good friends, and you said you were at OVW with him when you both of you were originally starting. He's a funny guy, and he's a guy also that's morphed his body a couple of times, you know, from being big, huge guy to real slim and real cut guy. And how what is that, mostly nutrition that he does, or how does he do that?
Yeah, yeah, he, I don't know, he's an encyclopedia on that stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's, he's my go-to guy whenever I have questions on what I, and on physique. He helped me a lot. He, you know, he gave me a lot of advice on what I needed to do.
Don't those guys make you mad? I mean, like Ron Simmons just had genetics, so Ron didn't have to do anything. Ron, you know, Ron's brother is a pro level bodybuilder, was in the Olympia, you know. So we always ask, what would Ron look like if he worked out? He'd work out, he'd look like his brother. He's, you know, got genetics. But these guys that are encyclopedias like Chris, you know, I was listening to Roman one time in the dressing room. He's going, yeah, I've got this 90-minute window. I can eat now. I have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, none. I wish I did, yeah, but I don't.
I don't either. Yeah, they've got all down to science. They even have those little, what do you call it? Like these weight things, you know, that weigh their food.
Oh, yeah. So
they,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they count their macros, whatever it was called. Yeah, some guys do that. Some guys just take it seriously.
So have you enjoyed your time back? You enjoy it more than your first time? Most guys do. I mean, I have, going back, you know, after, you know, being gone, you know, not wrestling, but just going back. Have you enjoyed it more? Uh-oh, we lost him.
What'd you do, Don?
I think we lost him.
He made the wrong turn.
Yeah, he made the wrong turn.
They left instead of right. They landed up in the Gulf of Mexico down there. I'm sure he'll be back on. He's a smart guy. But Carly, man, he's lived so many lives, you know, and that character there. And what a great character. I mean, you know, it's one of those characters, babyface or heel, you know, he can go and he's got the talent to do it either way.
Yeah, he was the second Intercontinental Champion, Puerto Rican Intercontinental Champion behind Pedro Morales.
Right.
You know, which if he'd have been around, you know, Pedro, there was such a huge Puerto Rican contingent in New York. You know, that was right. It was such a big deal, as you know.
Yeah, it was huge, and all over the South, where there were Latino populations.
Carlito, are you back? We can hear you, but we can't. Yeah. There you are.
Oh, there you go.
All yeah, right, sorry. Great.
We were saying in your absence that you know, is you're the second. I'm sure you know this better than we do. The second Puerto Rican Intercontinental Champion behind Pedro Morales. You know, and you would, you know, you kind of wish that, you know, back in the day, you made champions based upon, you know, that our fan base was. You know, Bruno, there's a huge Italian contingent in New York. There's also a huge Puerto Rican contingent. One of the reasons Pedro was so over at Madison Square Garden, and Bruno and others. Of course, he could work. You know, not,
yeah, he could work.
Not, that's not the sole reason, but, you know, it helps to have that identity behind it.
Yeah.
Did you ever know of Pedro, or your dad talk of Pedro?
Yeah, I knew of Pedro. My dad, I think, yeah, my dad worked, you know, he wrestled with him back in the day, but not much, you know, and it was before my time too. Like I said, I was kind of very young during his run, so I really didn't get to appreciate it.
And now you're back with the LWO and Rey Mysterio. That's a cool crew. I really
enjoy that.
I love the LWO. I think it's one of the best things he's done in years.
Yeah, it's fun this second time around, just because you know, now I'm one of the elder statesmen. You know what I mean? I'm one of the veterans now.
And,
so.
and that's really cool too, isn't it? I mean, by the way, it really is.
Yeah, it is cool, and it's cool now because my job now is to help out the younger talent, and you know, so that's what I enjoy about it now, is the being able to help these young guys, you know, give them whatever, pass on whatever knowledge I have onto them.
You know, the young guys kind of get knocked and get discredited for not, you know, being 100% in the business. I don't find that exactly true. I know the kids that I talk to down at NXT, they live this business. They love the business. And are you finding that out too, you know, that they're sometimes unjustly criticized for not being businessmen 100%?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of the guys that they have down there, always the ones that get called up, I think, you know, they take it seriously, you know what I mean? And they're all about it. So yes, I think some of them got a bad rap, but I think a lot of them that are down there, you know, because they're fans and they really want to do this.
Well, Carlito, it's your birthday today. We're taping this, so happy birthday. Thank you for taking time on your birthday, which is pretty cool. You're still young. How long do you want to wrestle? Or the plan?
I wanted to retire yesterday, but you know, I'm still trying to figure out what else I can do. You know, what else I'm good at, and I just haven't found the answer yet. So
it's like Arn Anderson says, "I can't do nothing else." That's me and Jerry. We can't do anything else. That's why we do a podcast about wrestling.
No, I get it.
You have talent. Me and Jerry don't have any.
I got left out of our desire list.
That's right. Well, Carlito, I know you're out looking for houses and you're busy. It's your birthday. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us. It's really cool of you to do that. I was so excited to see you come back. I've always enjoyed being around you. Always thought so much of you and your brother and your cousin. It's always been a pleasure to be around you. And thank you so much for taking the time out to come on me and Mr. Briscoe's show.
Thank you, man. It was my pleasure, man. It's always great talking to you guys.
Hey, John, don't cut it off, but to show you what kind of man he is, Carly was originally scheduled to be on last month, and I forgot. I totally forgot.
I was going to say, I was there already, and the call never came.
And I ran into him at the Royal Rumble, and I said, Carly, I'm looking forward to you being on the podcast. He kind of looks at me like, you dumb old man. You know, I was supposed to be on last month, but I just totally forgot, man, and I apologize like crazy.
No, don't worry about it. Don't worry.
Thank you for coming on and making me look better than what I should.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.